Well, today was a twice in 100 years event. Yes, it doesn't happen very often, the transit of Venus. And what is the transit of Venus? Well, it is when Venus travels between us and the Sun. You see, there's the Sun in the middle, and then there's a little planet called Mercury, and then going out from there, there's Venus, and then the third rock out from the Sun is the Earth. So there's only two planets can ever travel between the Sun and us, and that's Mercury and Venus. Now, Mercury lasted this in 2006, and Venus, last week I would have said it last did it in 2004, but now I have to say it did it last in 2012. And it happened today, as most of you will know, and hopefully most of you saw it. Contact 1 was at 8:16 this morning, contact 2 at 8:34, mid-transit 11:30, contact 3 at 14:26, and contact 4 was at 16 minutes to 3 this afternoon. Now, what do I mean by contact 1, 2, 3, and 4? Well, contact 1 is when Venus just touches the disk of the Sun. Contact 2 is when Venus is completely over the Sun. That is, you know, the whole of the disk of the Venus is now in front of the Sun. And contact 3 is when Venus starts to emerge from in front of the Sun. And contact 4 is when the last bit of Venus leaves the Sun. And what an exciting day. Now, last week I told you there was also going to be an eclipse of the Moon. Well, that happened on Monday, but if you were in Melbourne, you were very unlikely to have seen it because it was raining cats and dogs. And we're now suffering from that down on the Gippsland Lakes. But every day it rained over the weekend, I said, oh, goody, 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 goody. It's unlikely we get 4 days of rain in a row here in Melbourne, and that means that Wednesday will most likely be fine. And yes, it was. A bit of cloud, though, came over about 10 o'clock and lasted nearly 2 hours. But then the skies cleared again, and what a magnificent sight. The space show went to the observatory, which is on Birdwood Avenue, or not on it, but just off Birdwood Avenue, near the entrance to the Botanical Gardens, right near the Shrine of Remembrance. And the Astronomical Society of Victoria had set up a number of telescopes there for the public to view, and I sort of talked my way in there and did a number of recordings, so we're going to hear some of those now. Now, the first person we're going to hear is Perry Vlahos. He is president of the Astronomical Society of Victoria. You may know him from his articles that he writes in the Green Guide every Thursday. But here we go, Perry Vlahos talking about the transit of Venus.
Hello, Perry speaking.
Welcome to the space show, Perry.
Lovely to be with you, Andrew.
And what's happening here today?
This is an event where people have come along to watch the transit of Venus. And I think the crowd that's here are all pretty much in the know. In other words, they are very understanding of the fact that if they don't see this one, they won't get an opportunity to see another one. Certainly no one alive today, unless they've got exceptionally good genes or modern medicine in the future does something extraordinary, they're unlikely to be alive to see the next one. So people are taking this opportunity to make a historical connection, because this brings us into a direct relationship with Captain Cook, because obviously he saw it in Tahiti before coming to map the east coast of Australia. So a couple of good strong connections being made there.
Those Cook observations, of course, weren't as useful as they'd hoped, though.
Well, yes, unfortunately, but by the time they tabulated all of the other observing stations and their results, we got a reasonable idea of what the distance from Earth to the Sun was, and again, extrapolating using the laws of planetary motion from Kepler, we got a reasonable idea of what size the solar system was, and we discovered that it was bigger than we thought.
Now, what have you done here today?
I've been here since this morning, and I've done an awful lot of media and press and radio and television and spoken to people and told them what they should be looking out for and how to observe it, and also had a bit of time to squeeze a look in for myself from time to time as well. And even though I saw the last one in 2004, it's still quite a buzz to see this one.
And what have you got set up here today?
Lots of different size and types of telescopes. There's something like 20 to 30 different telescopes, and some of them are historic. As I'm glancing towards the southwest here, there's the 8-inch telescope and also the heliograph, which were put up in the observatory for the last, back in the 1800s, to observe the transit. And those instruments are doing the same thing again today.
Have you had a chance to gauge the reaction of the people looking?
Everyone is astounded that they can actually see it at all, in fact. So I don't think anyone is leaving unhappy. I think they've managed to get a good view, and they're all over the moon about it, if I can use an astronomical term. I haven't found anyone that is unhappy about what they got to see.
And the telescopes have been brought along by the members of the Astronomical Society?
Yes, ASV members have brought along their own telescopes and have either used the projection method or have used filters over the front of the telescopes in order to be able to see it. And again, just as a general caution, never, to your listeners, never ever look at the sun directly with your naked eye, because you will do untold damage. There's all sorts of harmful rays coming from the sun, gamma rays, X-rays, infrared rays, Ray Martins, everything that will do harm to your psyche and your eyes.
Yeah. Is that possibly why Galileo went blind later in life?
Look, that could be one of the reasons, because I believe in his earliest observations of the sun, he would do it during misty conditions. And of course, even though that took away the brightness of the sun and made it possible to look at the sun, it didn't stop any of the harmful rays getting through. Whereas today's modern filters can cut out 99.99% of all the harmful rays. But he may have had some other issues with his eyes. Could have been something that happens with the passing of time, like the gel in the eye pulling at the retina. It could have been anything. We're not sure, but certainly it may not have been a good idea to be looking at the sun directly as he did, but he was not to know.
Is the ASV making plans for the total eclipse, well, it won't be total here in Melbourne, of course, of the sun in later in the year?
We're making plans, but as individuals and small groups, we're not doing anything together as a society. We're letting people make their own way up there and sort out their own accommodation. But yes, there'll be many people from the ASV going up.
Well, thanks for joining us on the Space Show, Perry.
Oh, it's a great pleasure, as always.
Good. And I was talking there with Perry Vlahos, and you noticed the excited number of children running around, having a good old time there. Now, while there, I recorded this collage of sounds and people, both the astronomers and the public, and their comments, and they've got the astronomers to describe their equipment. And so, for the next 26 minutes, enjoy the sounds of the 2012 transit of Venus, as recorded in the at Melbourne Observatory, and right next to their botanical gardens near the Shrine of Remembrance in Melbourne.
And your name is?
Jim Dale from the Astronomical Society.
Thank you.
Now, what we've got here is the original 19th century telescope that was watching the viewings in the 19th century. In there is the 7-inch refractor, which has got Victorian mechanisms and clockworks to actually do the tracking. And up the stairway there is the telescope. On the back of the telescope is a projector, and the very large disc of the sun is seen there, with the small disc of the Venus and some of the sunspots, and that'll be tracking that all day. Around here is the heliograph, and that was used for doing spectral readings of the sun and break the light up so that they could see what was making up the sun and anything that was going on in the sun. So this is specifically meant for all the early observations or the late observations in the 19th century, and it's still operating today and operated by the Astronomical Society of Victoria.
Okay, identify first.
Maurice Valamberti is my name, and the setup I've got here at the moment is a small telescope that has two solar filters on it, and they work in conjunction to give you a very narrow band of light that comes through from the sun. The light is called hydrogen alpha. It's ionisation of hydrogen light. I've got a camera on the back of the scope, which is basically an industrial webcam, for want of a better word, and that's connected up to a computer, and then it shows it up on the screen.
Hmm. Yeah. And were you able to see the ingress?
Yes. We saw it was all a bit hectic here, but I mean, we did see it come in into the first contact. Yes, it was very good, and we got second contact as well. So hopefully, as the sun gets higher, our images will get a bit better because we're looking through less atmosphere. So,
were you at all worried over the weekend that we?
I was worried this morning at 5:30. I was here at 5:30, and there were clouds everywhere, and I'm thinking, oh gee, you know, is it going to be good or not? But it's turned out well.
Yeah, great. It's turned out very well. And much public interest?
Look, I think so. I'm surprised. I mean, we had a few television crews here earlier, and we've just had people, you know, slowly coming in, and I guess we've got a few hundred people here now. It's quite good. Yeah, it's good.
Okay, well, thanks for joining us, Jim.
Thank you. Okay.
Could you identify yourself, please?
My name's William. Would you like my last name?
Yes.
William Chalkley.
Well, thanks for joining us on the space show, William.
Yeah.
What sort of setup you got here?
It's one of those reflector telescopes, and we've basically just put a box with a sheet of paper on the end of it over the eye hole, so that you'd be able to project the image on the paper and see it from the other side. And we've got some cardboard with holes on it on the front of the actual telescope to dull the light down, so it's not quite so bright.
Otherwise the heat from the sun would burn out the telescope.
Yeah, although something that helps prolong that probability of it actually burning the paper is the fact that people constantly walk past it, so it's not always on it.
Yeah. And you're using, looks like, translucent tracing paper as a screen?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
And how big is the planet Venus compared to the sun? Perhaps you could describe it to us.
I can't really think of a way of describing it. I guess you could say, imagine your fist when it's clenched up with a I really actually can't think of a way to explain it.
Okay. And what are the other tiny spots we can see over the disk of the sun?
Those are sun specks. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us on the space show.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. My name's Dale Smith. I live in East Hawthorne.
Thanks for joining us on the space show, Dale. You've got a rather fascinating setup here. Can you tell us a bit about it, please?
Okay. Well, the telescope is a Meade Schmidt Cassegrain telescope, which gives you an upright image. So if you look through that telescope, you see the same view of the sky as if you look through the binoculars, which is different from a lot of these other telescopes. And the solar filter is a home-built arrangement that's made with a special solar film that cuts out 99.99% of all the light, so that it's safe to look through it with your eye.
So you bought the material and then built the filter yourself.
So a group of us from the Astronomical Society of Victoria did a bulk order and bought the material to make that, and I bought a springform pan from the two-buck shop to turn into the holder for it. And I've actually got a camera mounted on it, which is connected to my computer, so we can actually view the thing live on the screen and take photos on the computer as it goes along. It's actually been, I've been looking forward to this for about 6 years since I watched the transit of Mercury in 2006.
Yes.
And
did you see the transit of Venus in 2004?
I was a paying guest for that one, but that probably was what motivated me to get started into telescopes and joining the Astronomical Society.
And can you see anything else on the sun at the moment other than just the dark spot of Venus going across?
There are a number of smaller sunspots sort of scattered across the face of the sun. It's quite interesting. I can't see with the type of filter I have, you don't see the solar flares. You need a very, very special hydrogen alpha filter that cuts out all the frequencies, whereas this is a white light filter. This is basically a neutral density 10,000 filter that's on
and
there.
And are you recording the images?
So I am recording, periodically recording images. I'm not recording video, but I'm recording a number of images, and I hope maybe to do a little time-lapse montage once I'm finished.
Oh, great. Well, thanks for joining us on the special.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
I'm Barry Adcock, and the telescope is a 100mm or 4-inch F16. It's using an aluminized material at the objective end to attenuate the light, and at the eyepiece it's got an orange filter and an infrared blocking filter.
Hmm. And have you been able to see the ingress as well?
Yes, we did. Yeah, we saw it from it miraculously cleared right at the right time, and we saw the first and second contact.
Hmm. And how long are you going to be here for?
All hours. I'm going to be here until 3 o'clock, and then I've got a meeting after that, so I'll be lucky to be home for tea.
Okay. And what have people's comments been as they've been through?
They're all very taken with the with the magnitude of the event, its history, and yeah, the clarity of it now. That I don't think Cook would have seen it as clearly as what we are able to see here. With deference to Cook and his mates, he probably wouldn't have had a pretty ordinary telescope.
Oh, thanks for joining us, Barry.
Okay, thank you.
Okay,
well, I'm Mike Lyons, member of the ASV, and this is the second of the Venus transits, and we saw the other one in 2004. We had that one up on the car park at IKEA, and this one we're having here, and we've had a very good run. What I'm using here is a projector, so I'm just taking a very old 3-inch telescope, a refractor, the old-fashioned sort, and bouncing the light straight down onto a screen, and then everybody can see what's happening, and I can take pictures as the first contact begins and so forth, and people can just take pictures of the whole thing at any time they like. It's easier than looking through a scope, and there's no dangers involved because you can't get your eye into the eyepiece. And that's how we're going at the moment. We've had a brilliant start to the day. It was absolutely perfect weather. Couldn't have been better. It's clouding over a little bit later on, but right now it's been perfect.
Were you a bit worried over the weekend?
The beginning of the weekend, I thought no hope in the world. But then Darren, who's one of the organisers here, he said, "I'm an atheist, but I'm praying." It looks like atheist prayers work very well.
And what's been the reaction of the people who've looked at this?
I think as people see it, it's quite staggering, really, because you can see the sunspots, you can see Venus, you can see the whole thing, and they're able to take pictures. So anybody walking by with a camera or a mobile phone or an iPad or anything, they can just take pictures of the thing and they've got it forever. And you won't have another shot for 100 odd years, so this is the time to do it.
And we can see some thin clouds now drifting across the face of the sun.
Just a little bit now, but it's opening up a little bit here, and there it is.
Wonderful. And some beautiful sunspots there as well.
Yes, very strong sunspot activity, and If it gets active enough, there's a possibility people might even see the aurora down here. It's possible even at our latitudes here. But it's very rare that you'll see it at this latitude. It's more often near the poles you'll see it.
Well, thanks for joining us on the space show.
Okay.
Could you tell us your name, please?
Hedvig Waldhuber.
Now, how significant is this transit of Venus?
Well, scientifically, it's lost its significance because we already know, astronomers know already precisely the distance between the Earth and the Sun. But in the 17th and 18th and 19th century, there were still some questions open, exactly how far is the Sun away, or the Earth is away from the Sun. And the transit of Venus was one of the means where they could measure it, observe it, and make records of it. Like before photography, they used to hand draw what they saw, putting exact times down there. And then astronomers would sit down and mathematically work out through triangulation and other perhaps more complicated mathematics on how far the Sun was away. After Captain Cook's in 1769, when Captain Cook and many others came back with their results, it was worked out the distance from the Earth to the Sun, they worked it out, was only a 3% error to the modern value. Excuse me. Now, for that, astronomers needed the distance to Venus, from Earth to Venus. That was worked out by observing how long Venus takes to complete one orbit of the Sun. And they already knew how long the Earth takes to go around the Sun. And once these two factors were known, using Kepler's third law of planetary motion, astronomers were able to work out how far Venus was away. And once they knew their distance to Venus, and they observed Venus passing across the disk of the Sun, and especially when they had more than one observation from different parts of the Earth, they got two or more tracks. And the difference between, say, one track higher up and one further down, they worked out then where the observer was and worked out the distance and the angle and all this, and through some quite fairly complicated, challenging mathematics, they were able to work that out. Because prior to that, astronomers were able to work out the distance to Mars and Jupiter and Saturn by knowing how long it took these planets to complete one orbit around the Sun. If we go back to the 17th century, Johannes Kepler, the great German mathematician, worked out that to find the distance, once they knew how long Earth took to go around the Sun, to find out how long one of the planets that are visible to go around the Sun, it just means patiently observing it and wait till it comes back to the exact same spot in the sky. Once these two figures are known, they use, I think, the square of the period. A period in this case means how long a planet takes to go around. The square of the period was worked out, say if a planet takes 3 years to go around. The square of 3 is 3 times 3 is 9 years. Now, the next thing, eventually, Kepler discovered after many years that, no, we don't do that.
I've told you about 10,000 times today.
What happens is, the telescope moves easy, and it moves off, and you see nothing.
We've looked at every telescope.
Right.
We've been there. They just go to touch
children,
automatically, don't they?
Children.
They just go to touch automatically.
And it's great to see them here.
Yeah, well, not at school today.
So the cube root of 9, let's get back to this, is 3. No, it's not. It's 2 and a bit, right? 2 times 2 times 2 is 8 and a bit. So that gave him the distance. You know, the distance then was 2 astronomical, or 2 and a bit times the distance what Earth is from the Sun. And it took more than 150 years, or nearly almost 200 years, before astronomers were able to work out how far the Earth is from the Sun. But in the early days, they assumed that the Earth is a certain distance away from the Sun. Well, that's obvious. And they used that sort of measurement was used. Let's say the Earth is one certain distance away from the Sun. Now, Mars, they figured out, must be more than that, but Venus must be less than that. And this is how they worked out the distance to the planet. Because once you got the distance of a planet, then you already by that time know how long it takes around, the speed of it, the way it travels, can work out. If it passes near or in front of a distant star, they could time how long it took the star to disappear and reappear. That gave the size of it. And anybody likes to have a view?
Yes, please.
And the... Oops. Right. Please, you've been waiting. Please sit down.
My husband is
there. Yes, your husband can also, but... And how long... excuse me?
Sorry.
No.
What are you doing? No, you touched it.
No. I think you've done okay. There you are, please. And... So, this is why they worked out the distance to the remaining two inner planets, like Venus and Mercury. Yeah, they already knew how long they took to go around. And but the question was, getting back to the original thing, is the distance from Earth to the Sun. Yeah, it had to be worked out precisely, because science doesn't tolerate you can't have unprecise things. And so the Venus passing in front of the Sun was just like this, and it gave astronomers an excellent tool to work that out. Now, just see if the gentleman here can see things. And that's about what it's really about. And by about the time, let's say, the first fleet arrived in Australia in 1788, astronomers almost the world over, already knew roughly how far the Sun was away from the Earth. And that gave him an idea of the size of the solar system and all that. And it was just simply the quest to know. Modern astronomy had refined it a bit more, but basically they still use much the same methods. One moment, please. Allow me.
Very, very good.
Have another look. And so... Yeah. The significance of it today is, of course, it's an interesting event to watch. And the Sun has got sunspots on its surface. But it's also the knowledge there's not a single person alive in the world today that is going to be, or unless they live extraordinarily long, is going to be there in 105 years' time when the next transit of Venus will occur. If somebody's alive and well in 2117, they then can wait patiently for another 8 years until the next transit. And after that, it's 122 years. For the transit after that, and then the one beyond that is another 12 years away, and then it reverts back, and the one past that is then 105 years further on. Well, got this simply out of it. Transits. Yeah? Now here we're here today. I saw the 2004 one, June the 8th. Now have a look at the 2012, June the 16th. June the 6th, sir. The next one, 2117, December the 11th. 8 years later, 2125, December the 8th. Yeah? There's a gap of 100 years. Now, there's 122 years later, 2247, June, not quite so sure, the book didn't go that far. And 8 years later, 2055, you know. But then it reverts back to December. You find this consistent pattern. And if you went 1,000 years in the future, the pattern would be the same. And if you got, say, went thousands of years into the past, it was the same too.
Why was the first transit ever not seen before 1631?
Because the telescope came into use. Galileo wasn't the first one to use a telescope, but he was the first one who really, really made it public. He wrote about it. He had the most prominent people in his world. They're actually looking through his telescope. And, of course, even in the 17th century, the news spread by the speed of which a horse or a coach could travel, but it spread. And 1631, it was predicted by Kepler, but no known observers, yeah? But 1639, 8 years later, there were hundreds of observations were made. No. Hey, here, come here. And look at you with your best eye. No touching, because you pull it out of the way. Where were we? Telescopes.
The first observations of the Venus, transit and telescope.
1631, definitely there must have been some people, because the telescope was first used for astronomy in 1609. By 1610, a sizable part of Europe, those who were in certain circles, already knew about it. And reports come in from Holland and from England that in around about 1503, some people were looked through a spyglass at the moon, but nothing confirmed.
And the girl here has moved the telescope again.
But they're trying to get their eyes closed. Can you see it, Lily?
It's very rewarding when you hear children say, wow, you know? Very rewarding. Yeah.
Can I have a look?
One moment, allow me to make sure it's still there for everybody. Okay. Now give another child a look. Mm-hmm. Did you like it?
Give mummy a look. What did you say?
Isn't that better than sitting at school?
Can I say something?
Well, the mummy would like to ask you.
Hello, what's your name?
Lily.
And what did you see?
I saw this kind of black dot on the sun.
Oh, this Venus.
Yes. And what is the black spot?
Yes.
Venus.
Oh. Do you think you'll ever see such a thing again?
Not really.
And you want to see that.
Okay. Because it's very rare, isn't it?
Yeah.
And how come you're not at school today?
Because my sister's learning about space at school, so then our mum thought we should have come here and have a look at it instead.
Okay, well, thanks for joining us on the space show.
Oh, that's exciting. What else would we do? Let's get your
top off
and go to the
sun.
Pardon me,
sir. Can you see the glowing sun? You can see a large black dot at the top end. That's Venus. That's what it's all about.
She can hear it tonight on the space show.
Akira, make sure you don't touch anything.
Okay. The only kids that can't do that.
I want to get out of the way.
Yeah, isn't it? Okay.
Well, what have you just seen?
I've just seen what looks like a sticky dot on the sun.
I'm glad you see a bit better now.
Down below?
They're sunspots.
Oh, okay.
They're sunspots, they are. Yeah. Remember, the sunspot's about 2,000 degrees.
Are you recording this?
Yippee! Just now.
Yeah. Oh, it's gone.
Is it? Okay, sorry about that. Please come around here and stand up. all depends on the clouds.
Yeah.
You won't see a thing. Of course, it'll fill holes.
It's completely gone, yeah.
Just was that for a flash?
Yeah, very hard. No, I can't even make it out myself.
No, it's gone now.
Are you taping? It's not for the radio, eh?
No, just black. Just in my own reflection, really, I think.
You've got to get your eye really close.
Okay.
It's quite close eye relief on it.
It moved a bit.
Well, we'll have to rectify this.
This is good. I can hear everything. I'm learning too.
There you are.
Oh, you're wonderful. Thank you.
Okay.
What you saw was the same.
Thank you.
Please sit down.
The sounds of the astronomers and the excited public at the viewing session held in at the Melbourne Observatory, which is just off Birdwood Avenue near the Shrine of Remembrance today. And once again, that transit started a little after 8 in the morning and continued until about 2:45. And, well, we here in Melbourne saw it. An occasional little bit of cloud came over, but as you heard, there's a few comments here, oh, we can't see it for a little while there, but it came back, and what a magnificent sight it was. Well, this is the Space Show.